I'm going to call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order and let the record reflect that the time is currently 1:02 p.m. on Friday, August 20th, 2021. And present today, we've got Representative Thompson, Representative Carpenter, Representative LeBon, Representative Edgman, Vice Chair Ortiz, Co-Chair Merrick is on teleconference, Representative Rasmussen is also on teleconference, Representative Josephson, Representative Wool, Representative Johnson, and myself, Co-Chair Foster. And as we start, just a reminder, folks could mute their cell phones. Today's presentation is an overview of the governor's bill, which is HB 3003. It's the governor's appropriations bill. And here to present, we have Neil Steininger, Director of the Office of Management and Budget. Director Steininger, if you could come up to the table, introduce yourself and put yourself on the record, and would you prefer that we, well, I think this is probably going to be fairly short, so we'll take questions as they come. So please proceed.
Thank you. For the record, Neil Steininger, Office of Management and Budget. I'm here today to present on HB 3003, the appropriation bill to accompany the other factors within an overall fiscal plan being discussed during this special session. So during the special session, we're talking about a fiscal plan for the state of Alaska, and there's several components to that fiscal plan, including constitutionally protecting the permanent fund dividend, and power cost equalization program and endowment, establishing meaningful limits to expenditure growth, and providing for a bridge to a sustainable fiscal plan. Some of those aspects require appropriations in order to enact and implement these concepts to bring us to a durable fiscal plan for the state of Alaska. And so to that end, we've introduced HB 3003 to address some of those appropriation needs, as well as to address another immediate impact to individuals within the state of Alaska. In addition to addressing that fiscal plan, this appropriation bill does provide us some opportunities to address things in the FY22 budget. So the permanent fund dividend is the first of those issues. That issue of not having an appropriate permanent fund dividend is resolved in HB 3003. There's also impacts from the sweep. The sweep impacted or was going to impact the Power Cost Equalization Endowment Fund, but that was resolved by the decision in the Alaska Federation of Natives case. And so the appropriations associated with the Power Cost Equalization Program or Fund have been released, and those appropriations are now being executed on by their respective offices in the executive branch. There's also the higher education scholarship and grant programs, which are impacted by the sweep. Those issues are resolved in HB 3003. But there are also other operating and capital budget shortfalls that are ongoing and not directly addressed in HB 3003, and I'll address a little bit more of why that is later in the presentation. So to briefly summarize the sections in the bill, it's a fairly short appropriation bill. There's the permanent fund dividend payment is $1.53 billion for the payment of the calendar year 2021 dividend, based on a calculation of 50% of the percent of market value draw. So this provides an estimated $2,350 dividend per eligible Alaskan. There's also three appropriations. These are fund source changes in the budget. When you read the budget bill, the bill itself, you'll see zero rows. Really what that's doing is swapping the fund sources for the Alaska Performance Scholarship Awards, Alaska Education Grants, as well as the WAMI Medical Education Program. They're being moved from the Higher Education Investment Fund to unrestricted general funds because the balance of the Higher Education Fund will be swept into the Constitutional Budget Reserve. Additionally, there's a deposit of $1.47 billion into the CBR from the Earnings Reserve. This is the balance of the $3 billion bridge fund. That's a key component of the overall fiscal plan for the state of Alaska. Along with this presentation, we've provided a list of budget impacts from the Constitutional Budget Reserve vote failure, the three-quarter vote in the fiscal year 22 budget that was not achieved. There are some immediate issues that impact individual Alaskans, and we've sought to resolve these issues in HB 373, and these are the scholarships and education grants. We've resolved those with the UGF backfill to directly support that program. However, there are also issues that are not immediate impacts to individuals that we haven't resolved in this bill, but do require being looked at. Those are both unfunded capital projects. Those capital projects, while they remain unfunded, will simply be delayed until a valid funding source is appropriated, and also partially funded operating items. You can see in the attachment that these operating items that are partially funded, they have access to current year revenues, which allow operations up until towards the end of the fiscal year. For the most part, most of the challenges to operations will manifest in the fourth quarter of the fiscal year. And so that gives us time to investigate these programs and determine what the best solution to each individual need is. And those solutions really are something that requires a robust discussion about the financial structure each of those programs has. I'd really like to point out that not including them in HB 3003 should not be interpreted as a lack of support for these programs. I think when you look at this list, you'll see that these are programs that very much so the administration supported. We included these appropriations primarily in our December 15th budget or subsequent amendments that we put forward. There are a lot of priority items for the governor in here, things like Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. And so we recognize that these are programs that we support. It's just a solution to those issues is something that requires a robust discussion and not necessarily a simple short-term solution. So we're here to engage in looking at each of these programs, and it will be, say there are options to address these shortfalls that may or may not be the same as the option used for the scholarship and education grants. And so with that, there's more information and reports and a copy of the bill available on the OMB website. And if anyone has questions on this or on the supplementary materials listing out the issues of the CBR vote failure, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you. Do we have any questions of the committee? Representative Edgeman.
Yes, good afternoon. Good to see you again, Mr. Steininger. So, I guess going back to page two, just to make the point before I get to my question, the durable fiscal plan, I see constitutionally protect, but I don't see vote of the people up there, but I presume that that's sort of inferred when you say constitutionally protect, because real underpinning of the governor's fiscal plan going forward was to have, major items like the spending cap, new revenues, the 50-50 plan go before Alaskan voters before they could be enacted. But I presume that that's just sort of in the backdrop of that those three bullets up there. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Edgeman, yes, these are constitutional amendments that would have to go to the voters.
Basically what the administration is doing with the middle of this bill and the parsing out, if you will, of the two or three items outside of the PFD is to make a policy call in terms of what's involved in the reverse sweep. I guess I'd be interested in knowing what the plan is for the rest of the items that involve a reverse sweep vote. And if that's just to be dealt with later, or is there a plan, or is there anything you can publicly tell us that might give us advance notice of what the next steps might be?
Through the chair, Representative Edgeman, these programs listed on this sheet do require investigation in how to resolve those issues. We've resolved the issue with the higher education scholarship programs with a fund swap to unrestricted general funds. However, that's a somewhat inelegant tool for solving all of these problems, because some of the issues with some of these appropriations aren't necessarily things that need to be resolved just with the UGF fund swap. That may ignore some of the problems, or not necessarily problems, but some of the operational realities are being revealed as we implement the sweep. So when you look at these, a lot of these are programs that over the course of the last decade or so have had a lot more burden placed on these designated revenues, more so than the revenue being collected in any given year. And the solution to that problem may or may not be a backfill of general funds. It may be looking at the structure of that program and the costs inherent in that program. So as we look at the best solution for each individual one, it's going to involve a lot of detailed work with the departments. And really, you know, these were issues that may always have existed. They just weren't really highlighted until we started to implement the sweep and see that, you know, some of these revenues or some of the structures in the programs were, you know, not necessarily as sustainable as we thought they were when they were simply part of the DGF column and not looked at quite as closely. So I think what you'll see is as we go through that process with the agencies and determine what, you know, what realistically current year revenue is to each of these programs, that you'll start to see those individualized solutions come out. And some of these solutions may be things that need to be addressed, you know, through the robust subcommittee process with the legislature and all of that stakeholder engagement inherent in that process. And for some of these issues, you can see the shortfall may only be 1 to 4 to 5% of their overall budget, which is admittedly may be challenging to manage too for some program managers, but does allow us that time to go through that more robust process through, you know, the legislative cycle through a supplemental bill development next session, or possibly during this session if, you know, there's appetite to address those issues.
Representative Edgeman?
So if we could go to slide 3, I guess, for my final points. I think I'd like to mention along the way that to accomplish the objective at the top of the page requires the legislature to violate the Senate Bill 26, the law that was put in place in 2018 that created the structured draw process from the earnings of the permanent fund. And in fair enough, there were those who'd say that the legislature has been violating the permanent fund dividend statute as well. But I just want to put that on the record that those two should go hand in hand. The final point I'd like to make is maybe to ask Mr. Steininger or you to talk a little bit about the process involved with the comprehensive fiscal plan as envisioned by the administration, based on, you know, the thought process, at least as I was aware of it, earlier during May and June, about tying in the overdraw of the earnings reserve relative, again, to Senate Bill 26, but tying that into the larger elements of the fiscal plan, new revenues, budget cuts, other provisions as put forward by the administration and some by the working group as well. But where do we go from here if we use this bill to overdraw and let's say the legislature finishes its work? We pass the bill as requested by the administration, but and pardon my vernacular here, but that carrot doesn't exist anymore to make those tough choices on revenues and budget cuts and other things that we all know we need to take in order to put a durable long-term fiscal plan together. But what's the thought process behind that as I sit here and contemplate this bill before me?
Through the chair, Representative Edgeman, that's a really good, you know, discussion that we'd like to have. And I think, you know, the purpose of HB 3003 is really as a companion to those other constitutional amendments. You know, this really is here to support the wider discussion around things like HJR 7, protecting the permanent fund dividend and the PCE and the permanent fund itself. You know, those issues are, you know, key fiscal issues for the state. And this appropriation bill isn't, you know, the agenda in and of itself. This appropriation bill is there to support the discussions and the decisions that need to be made on those bigger policy issues. So, you know, I don't see, you know, this appropriation bill as taking away the carrot, so to speak. This is here in a supporting role to, you know, the work that I'm sure, you know, the Commissioner of Department of Revenue would love to come to this committee and explain in more detail and answer some of those questions for you. Because that really, that work being done there on HGR 7 is, you know, the primary objective, and this is here to support that work.
Okay, thank you. And if we could all maybe just get a little closer to our mics, just so the folks on the teleconference can hear us a little bit better there. Next up, we've got Representative Rasmussen and then Representative Ortiz. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a couple questions. Mr. Sandiger, I appreciate that the administration included the Alaska Student Scholarships and Grants, because I think that that is incredibly important, and it's just so unfair to all the students who have worked so hard to earn the scholarship as one of the top 10% of their class at their high school. And I know WAMI is incredibly important to our state, especially facing a shortage of healthcare workers right now. So those are super important, but I'm curious if the administration considers the oil tax credits that we're supposed to be funding at a statutory level, and I believe with the fund source change that those may not have been paid. And my other question is, does the one-time transfer take into account the $4 billion transfer that was made through the budget process already? And what would that leave the balance of the earnings reserve at after this proposed bill?
Through the chair, Representative Rasmussen. So the purpose of including the Alaska Student Scholarships and Grants and not the other unfunded operating appropriations, you mentioned the oil and gas tax credits, is because there's a very immediate impact on individual Alaskans with the scholarships and grants. There's no ability to, you know, delay to find a different solution. It's something that come September 1st, WAMI students will receive bills based on out-of-state tuition if this appropriation is not made. The oil and gas tax credits, while they do impact Alaskans, they impact Alaskan businesses, there is a little bit more ability to, you know, delay that as we work through a solution. So really, we were looking at these things that had those immediate impacts on individual Alaskans. In terms of balance of the earnings reserve based on, you know, this proposal as well as a $4 billion transfer, I believe on June 30th, the balance of the earnings reserve was roughly $20 billion. So then the $4 billion goes into the corpus, taking you to 16. You have $3 billion in the POMV draw, and then $3 billion here in the bridge fund draw, inclusive of the dividend. So you're looking at a remainder of about $10 billion. However, you know, that said, the proposals really before the special session would roll the entirety of the earnings reserve into the corpus and constitutionally protect it, you know, to ensure that the only amount coming out is that sustainable 5% draw over time. And the bridge fund and this $3 billion draw here is simply to allow us to work through this time period as we make transitions in the state's fiscal structure.
Thank you. If I could have a quick follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow-up.
Thank you. So I appreciate the urgency around the scholarship programs and the higher education fund, but it's my understanding that a lot of these oil companies have been holding off on final investment decisions on a lot of big projects. I know PICA with the oil search is one, and that's potentially 150,000 barrels a day. So I guess if they're making these decisions in quarter four, I'm not sure if the administration has plans to call another special session this year, but it seems like it would be prudent to consider that, given that there's companies who are making billion-plus dollar investment decisions in the near future, in the next couple months.
Okay, I'd also like to recognize a couple of legislators that we have in the room here, Representative McKay, Representative Kronk, Representative McCabe, Representative McCarty, and Representative Drummond. Thanks for joining us here today. Next question goes to Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Sterniger, for your presentation of HB 3003. I have a question in relation, I have a couple of questions, Mr. Chairman, but the first question would be, the 1.47 quote one-time transfer from the earnings reserve account to the CBR. Are we saying with that, with this bill then, that the governor no longer wants to see a $3 billion transfer to act as the bridge to getting us to a long-term fiscal plan. Has he stepped away from requesting a $3 billion transfer and now is saying a $1.47 billion transfer?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, the transfer, the $3 billion transfer is net of both the dividend payment here and the CBR deposit. So when you look at the modeling that's been produced by Department of Revenue, the way they're reflecting fiscal year 22 shows the POMV draw, the SB26 POMV draw splitting between the dividend and government, and then the $3 billion transfer coming out. Since HB 69, the FY22 appropriation bill, already included that full POMV draw. You know, here, just for technical and drafting reasons, you see that bridge fund getting split between the dividend and the deposit to the CBR. The net effect is the same as the presentation in the DOR presentations. It's just once that, you know, kind of rubber meets the road in appropriation bill drafting, this is how it appears. So it is still the same $3 billion bridge fund.
Then, with that in mind, can you tell me about the governor's intention for the 2022 PFD amount?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, the first bullet here, the calendar year 21 or fiscal year 22 dividend would be based on a 50% calculation of the POMV draw. So rather than the current statutory formula, what we're proposing here is in alignment with the constitutional amendments that are before the body.
So then, I guess what I'm saying, my final question is, I think the working group has recommended that that whatever steps we take, that we try to accomplish the fiscal plan with one bill or several bills, but it happens at one time and that all the different parts are taken care of at one particular effort. Do you see HB 303 is contributing to that emphasis of kind of solving our problem in a one-shot deal?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, yes. The other items that are before the legislature under this special session, you know, are, you know, would be implementing those constitutional amendments necessary to, you know, accomplish the entire fiscal plan together, as well as, you know, the other items on the call that are available for legislative proposals. HB 3003 is really a supporting appropriation bill to support those constitutional amendments and to make those appropriations of the dividend and support the fiscal plan by implementing the bridge fund. So HB 3003 really isn't taken on its own. HB 3003 is a part of that overall package. You can't write a single bill that implements all of these different policies, and so there have to be separate bills that implement them together during this special session.
Thank you. In line, I've got Representative Wool, Josephson, and Carpenter. Representative Wool.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I share some of the concerns that Representative Edgman was talking about earlier as far as the overdraw of the SB 26 5% draw. And I know some people have mentioned that they would perhaps be willing to do that if there was a formula change, which you're not really proposing a formula change, you're proposing an amount based on a formula change. And also, the working group came up with a few suggestions that I don't want to put words in anyone's mouth as far as consensus or any of that stuff, but I know some of the concepts that you just alluded to were constitutional amendment for the 5%, a 50-50 POMV, PFD, some budget cuts, and some revenue, and I think the working group also wanted to enact those sort of simultaneously, also been mentioned by previous members of the committee, that you can't look at any one of these isolated in a vacuum, and you even said that yourself. But why is revenue not being presented? You're presenting the constitutional part, you're presenting the the bridge fund, you're presenting the overdraw, and the bridge is to a sustainable fiscal package, but even the working group said that revenue would need to be part of that. And how come the administration isn't putting forth any revenue as towards this fiscal plan? I think page one says durable fiscal plan. So how come revenue isn't part of that?
Through the chair, Representative, we'll, revenue is included on the special session call, so there is the availability for revenue measures to be introduced. And I know that Commissioner Mahoney would be happy to come to this committee and discuss the elements of HDR 7 and the other elements of the fiscal plan and give some of the presentations that she gave to the working group to, walk through some of the analysis that her team has done. But I'm here really to talk about the appropriation side and the appropriations necessary to implement this fiscal plan. And that's really why I haven't, talked on revenue, because, we're here to discuss the appropriation bill.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My last question, page 5, line 10, retroactivity. Is that retroactive July 1? Is that concept acceptable? Is that going to be objected to by the administration or executive branch? Is that okay language for this bill?
Through the chair, Representative Wohl, assuming that a two-thirds vote for the effective date clause in the bill is enacted, then these, appropriations could be enacted immediately upon being signed.
Thank you. We've got Representative Josephson and then Representative Carpenter. Representative Josephson.
Thank you, the Chair. Director, you said in answer to Representative Rasmussen's question about the balance in the ERA after the SB 26 draw and this reduction. The concern I have is that you didn't note the unrealized earnings. And my understanding is that really the balance after those components is about $9 billion, not the number you used. Can you explain that difference?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I think the number I land on was $10 billion, but I was also just trying to do math in my head on the fly, so I apologize if it's, not perfect.
Follow up. But the $10 billion you used excluded a reduction for unrealized earnings, did it not?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I'd have to just put it down on paper and not be doing math in my head to make sure I give you a perfect, accurate number. I was just trying to get rough in the ballpark there, but yes.
And the other component was, as Representative Rasmussen noted, that we transferred $4 billion to the corpus. And Mr. Chairman, I only make this point because the permanent fund is very consistent and fairly adamant that they want three times the draw remaining in the ERA, and I'm not sure that this proposal would do that. The next question? I take it from your spreadsheet here that you've separated items that are partially unfunded from those that are 100% unfunded, and I understand the reason. And my take is that it's because there's continuing cycle of revenue, and so up to at least the fourth quarter, they're sort of self-perpetuating, self-funded. Is that right?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, that's correct. So because revenue is collected throughout the fiscal year, we allow access to expenditures on appropriations up to the amount of projected revenue.
Follow up. Are there not scores of other funds, that are also swept that are not on this sheet?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, this sheet's trying to represent only those places where the sweep impacts an existing appropriation. So other funds that are swept but then have sufficient revenue in the fiscal year to meet the whole appropriation made, those aren't on the sheet because there's no operating issue associated with the sweep. Or funds that are swept that don't actually have any connection to budgetary revenues of appropriations, you know, funds that, you know, are just kind of sitting there in the accounting system that are, you know, separately accounted for. Those funds wouldn't be here because they don't impact an operating appropriation. So really this is just trying to, as we've learned more about responding to the sweep and implementing an operating state government kind of in this new post-sweep world, this is, you know, refining that view of where are the problems really? Where do the problems really lie as a result? And that's what this represents. So there are other funds swept, not represented on this sheet, but that sweep didn't have an impact on FY22 appropriations.
Final follow-up. Follow-up? Again, returning to the context of Representative Rasmussen's question, you answered the sort of the imminent problem versus the oil and gas tax credit. She made her argument. I think there was some merit to it, that maybe it felt imminently by the industry as well. You didn't note the school debt reimbursement, also insufficient, $4.1 million in this 100% category. And I'm also thinking of community assistance. If because of the failure of the three-quarter reverse sweep, we're willing to spend appropriately $20+ million on students, what about these other sorts of items? Why shouldn't they be in this bill?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, the community assistance program, actually, since it was funded from PCE, under the AFN decision, we have released that appropriation. So that deposit is being made into the community assistance fund. So that's no longer represented on these, you know, issues related to sweep sheets because it's no longer considered a sweepable fund. In terms of the, you know, school bond debt reimbursement and the oil and gas tax credits, I want to make sure that, you know, my comments on the immediacy and impact to individual Alaskans shouldn't be taken as, you know, a lack of support or a lack of sympathy for the impacts of these other appropriations, but we're really looking at, you know, the fact that come September 1st, you know, real people, real students in our state are going to feel an impact of the lack of this appropriation, and we're looking to resolve that issue. These other issues are not things that we don't think are issues. They're not, you know, not that we're saying they're problems that don't need solving. They are problems that do need solving, but this is attempting to address just the most urgent to keep the focus on the larger fiscal plan issues that are before the legislature that we are looking to work on.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I was a member of the fiscal policy working group, and I just want to correct the record that while we did agree that a comprehensive plan, singular, needs to be considered, it wasn't ever a discussion that that would be through one vehicle, one bill, or one resolution, or one thing. So comprehensive plan would likely be a constitutional amendment, statute changes in a bill, an appropriations document to address things that need to be appropriated. So it wasn't just one particular vehicle, and I just want to correct the record that that was never that kind of discussion within the work group.
Thanks. That's a good question for that.
Representative Carpenter, if you could, did you have a continuing?
Yes, I wasn't finished. I was going to point out that all of the funds and programs that are represented here that are unfunded can be funded with amendment to the operations or the appropriations bill that we have currently. We just have to decide where the funds come from as a power appropriation. Is that not correct?
That is correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Ortiz.
Just a follow-up question for Representative Carpenter. Appreciate that and understood that to be the case. I guess my question is, wasn't the intent, though, that it would be at one, quote, time? Like, in other words, that we would be dealing with them within kind of at the same time, so they can't just do one thing and then perhaps leave that as it is without doing the rest of the package. Wasn't that the intent?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That is correct. A comprehensive package with multiple components that are agreed upon at a single time. That way we can move forward with that comprehensive plan. It is no longer comprehensive if we only act on one thing and leave the others for some other time and group of people.
Thank you.
Representative LeBron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And since we're talking about a long-term fiscal plan, a comprehensive plan to follow up on the last two comments, the occurrence to me in looking at House Bill 3003 is that the need for a large draw against the earnings reserve account is a requirement, and just looking again at the percentage of that draw, it's about a 10% draw against the formula, the percent of market value formula. The Senate Bill 26 formula calls for 5% drawn to draw another $3 billion is approximately a 10% draw. Would that be true?
Through the chair, Representative LeBron, yes. However, I'd like to note that the $3 billion bridge fund is a one-time draw that is part of a structural reform. And so it's not a, you know, unsustainable continued, you know, draw from the earnings reserve. It is one time in order to implement the constitutional change that protects the earnings reserve, because when we move the earnings reserve into the corpus of the permanent fund dividend, you know, we need a place to go to, you know, as we implement other changes, whether they're spending reductions or revenues, whatever is decided upon. We need a bridge to get us to the point in the modeling where we reach that, you know, sustainable fiscal picture.
A follow-up, Mr. Chairman, thank you for that clarification. I guess my follow-up would be sustainability of a model. And did the administration consider some type of a stair-step model to get from point A to point B rather than all done in 1 year? And I guess this would be part question, part comment. Endowment, we call it the Alaska Permanent Fund, but a public purpose endowment requires some fiscal discipline in the management of that endowment. And that fiscal discipline is you set your draw rate and then you hold to the discipline of that draw rate. If you deviate from that draw rate, what is the compelling argument to do so? And I would suggest to you, most public endowments, it's very rare that you deviate from that fiscal discipline of your draw rate, but here in this case, we're deviating from that. So my question would be, did the administration consider some type of a stair-step approach to that deviation to soften that draw rate and maybe help sustain the permanent fund for years to come and not just for the today? Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative LeBron, I think these are really good questions that I think a more robust discussion with Commissioner Mahoney on the details of the modeling and on the details of HGR 7 would be very beneficial. I think some of the questions being asked today are really things that she'd be able to go into a very, you know, deep level with you and discuss, and would be happy to do so. But the one thing that I will say is that our proposal does protect the permanent fund in perpetuity and does, you know, implement good management of that fund by bringing it all into the corpus, treating it as a single fund, and not leaving the earnings reserve available for simple appropriation. And so that will protect the permanent fund over time.
And just one last follow-up, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for that answer. And I'm not trying to create a public debate with you and I over the philosophy of an endowment, but I would suggest to you that it does impair the fund at some level. If you're looking long-term, if you're looking today and next year, you could argue, well, that's way off into the future. But if you do overdraw the earnings reserve and you impair the fund for its future growth capability, then generationally there will be a day where that has to be that question has to be answered. I think it's just unavoidable. Of course, the immediate gratification and reward for overdrawing the earnings reserve, folks would argue that now's the time to do it, and we have money in the fund to do it, and we should take that action for other justifiable reasons. I'm just pointing out that a public purpose endowment rarely takes this kind of action and tries its very level best to avoid it for long-term generational reasons. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Carpenter?
Thank you. And along those same line of thoughts here, I'm curious, what is the percent of draw of the bridge fund here, the 1.47, in relation to the total value of the ERA?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, failed at doing mental math a little bit earlier in the day, but 1.47, you know, combined with 1.53 is $3 billion bridge draw, the ERA balance of roughly $20 billion at the close of the fiscal year. Now, so you're looking at, 15%?
Okay. Follow up? Does the legislature have the authority to deviate from statutory appropriation language?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, the legislature has appropriation authority and can appropriate from the earnings reserve, yes.
That's not the question that I asked. The question I asked is, do we have the authority to deviate from statutory language law that is appropriation related?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, yes, any amount could be appropriated from the earnings reserve. If the question you're asking is whether or not the legislature has the authority to appropriate greater than the 5% of market value draw, the answer to that question is yes.
Can you elaborate on why that is? What gives us that authority?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, I don't know that I necessarily want to go out of my depth into a legal analysis there.
Thank you.
I'd just also like to mention that Representative Nelson also joined us earlier. Thank you for joining us. Representative Josephson?
Through the chair, Mr. Steininger, you have my support given politics in this building and the stalemate we find ourselves in to use general fund monies to fund the three items you've noted there in the middle, to be clear, the Alaska Student Scholarships and Grants. However, my question is this. The administration, I assume, remains concerned about the sweep, I hope, because I'm reminded that, for example, the Higher Education Investment Fund had a balance of $344 million a year ago. It now has $420 million because it's managed so wisely. In its present status in the CBR, a 20% growth, which of course is not sustainable, is going to be reduced to 2%. Is that right?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, yes, I believe 2% is the long-term outlook of current CBR investment.
So am I right that the administration agrees with me that the CBR sweep is sort of untenable as a long-term? It can't sustain itself forever. There must be either reform of the 1990 amendment or a reverse sweep.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, emphatically yes. One of our constitutional amendments actually deals with this very issue, and deals with the issue of the structure of the CBR and the repayment provision. And I would agree, yes, a reduced investment earning is an issue, but we proposed in our December budget to reverse the sweep, and we supported it then, but it wasn't enacted, and so now we're looking for other solutions to these discrete problems, such as the scholarships and grants. But however, yes, we do recognize that looking at the structure of the CBR is a key part of the overall fiscal plan for Alaska, and that's part of that constitutional amendment that also addresses looking at how the state can increase spending over time and ensuring that we have meaningful constitutional spending limit that can let people rest assured that there won't be a run up in spending and address some of these other pieces of the fiscal plan.
Representative Wu.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This PFD amount is based on a calculation of 50% of POMV draw, which would necessitate an overdraw of the 5%. Has the administration calculated what the maximum PFD check could be without the overdraw? Because, as you know, many people are adverse to violating SB 26, certainly in the absence of a more comprehensive fiscal package. Have you done that calculation?
Through the chair, Representative Wohl, we've proposed alternately a statutory dividend or this dividend that matches to the fiscal plan put forward. You know, a surplus dividend really isn't something that, you know, from policy perspective, this administration, you know, supports or models.
Okay. Do we have any other questions of the committee? Representative Edgman?
Is it possible that, given the sideboards that would be in place if this bill were to be passed, we know what the Senate Bill 26, quote unquote, draw for next year is going to be, $3.2 billion, is that right, Director Steininger?
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, that sounds about right. I don't know, have the number off the top of my head, though.
I don't either, but I think it's in that range. So if we have a $3 billion draw for bridge funding, it's totally possible we could have a smaller dividend next year, $23.50, because we've got these sideboards in place in terms of revenue, given that the one unknown at this point would be oil revenue, largely speaking, because even though prices are up, production varies, and prices for that matter vary too. But it seems to me that underlying this, or if I'm out there watching this hearing today, I think based on what I'm hearing and seeing, that next year's dividend is going to be $2,350 as well. But the reality is it depends on expenditures, right? We've got a big chunk of money we hope is coming through the National Infrastructure Act that should take shape before the year is out, that could require a match amount, 10% for every 100% that we've seen before in DOT projects. But, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, there could be a smaller dividend next year because the expenditure side, which isn't represented on this page, could be a much different number than what we know today. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, as I said earlier, HB 3003 is a companion to other changes, and those changes include changing the permanent fund dividend program to be 50% of the POMV draw. So that this, if this is taken,
Mr. Chairman, that has to go to the vote of the people. That's a constitutional amendment, so that doesn't come into effect until FY24. So next year, we don't have that in place.
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, passing this suite of constitutional amendments and this appropriation bill that supports them, the intention would be, even though they haven't been signed into law and put into the Constitution by the voters, that we would follow them anyway. Because we've chosen to pass them, we've chosen to put them to the voters because we believe in them, we would follow them in the next fiscal year. And so, if these constitutional amendments are passed, yes, it takes time for the voters to vote them into the Constitution, but we would still prepare a budget and treat state finances as if they were in place because they are the plan that we are putting forward. And, you know, to put forward a plan and then immediately not follow it, you know, would to an extent undermine, you know, why the plan was passed in the first place. And so this appropriation bill is associated with those pieces of the plan, and if that change to the dividend, if HGR 7 is voted on and passed by the legislature, we would seek to follow it even though it wasn't constitutional law next year.
So in essence, wouldn't that be rising above the legislature's ability to appropriate then? Because it's not an official agreement, it's sort of an informal agreement, right? I'm not a lawyer, but until it's actually voted in by the people in the Constitution, it's not the law of the land. It is sort of an unofficial compact, if you will, between the maker of the comprehensive plan, the administration, and the legislature. But the legislature, through the Willikowski case, clearly has ability to appropriate, and that rises above any sort of statutory obligations and any other sort of, you know, i.e. the compact with the university or something like that. that's me. I just want to be very clear to my constituents, if this were to pass, it's not written in stone that the PFD is going to be 2350 next year, because who knows what the legislature is going to do next year, much less what oil prices, oil production, what the market performance, all that stuff is going to be. And in the force majeure events, the world that we live in, there could be one-time occurrences on the expenditure side that we can't anticipate today. So to me, to be able to, I want to be clear about that to my constituents. I'm not trying to trap you into anything here, mm-hmm. but that reality, to me, clearly exists. And then it's really interesting. One last commentary would be that, to Representative Carpenter's comments as a member of the working group, sort of the holistic nature of all of this going together tells me that there's other bills to follow, because on the revenue side, that's a big component of this whole comprehensive package that I think we need to have in order to get us through that bridge funding period 2 years down the road, where we don't need more bridge funding or overdrawing of the earnings reserve. So I would look forward to seeing some of that as well, perhaps if time permits, in front of this committee too, because there's a much bigger picture than this bill itself that the administration envisions. And if we're going to sort of promise a $2,350 PFD, it also implies that certain things have to happen next year to get to that number. And as the way I see it, there's a lot of variables that are out of our control at this point.
Okay, we've got a question, Representative Carpenter.
Thank you. Another recommendation for you, Mr. Chairman. Totally understand the skepticism from the member from Dillingham. There's plenty of skepticism about comprehensive plans during our working group discussion. I think it would be helpful for the committee to see the models. Models are just a best guess about the fiction of the future that we're drafting now, that our own ledge finance has drafted and shared with the working group and have shared with other groups. It would be helpful for the discussion to answer some of the questions potentially that have been raised. Thank you.
Probably aren't ready right now. I do see we've got Mr. Alexi Painter here, but I see him shaking his head, so another time, okay. I know that he's presented to multiple groups here recently just to go over some of those. So, but anyway, do we have any further questions of the committee? Representative Ortiz?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm apologize, Mr. Steininger, at the risk of my own slowness, I guess we'll say, perhaps slowness. I don't get where the $1.47 billion transfer, why there's not in the future, somewhere down the line, another $1.53 billion transfer overdraw to get to that $3 billion bridge. I just don't quite understand that.
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, the $3 billion bridge, the $3 billion draw from the earnings reserve in this bill then is split, roughly half of it, $1.53 billion, to pay the permanent fund dividend, and the other portion to be deposited into the constitutional budget reserve. The way that prior models presented to the working group present this is a $3 billion transfer into the constitutional budget reserve, a $1.53 billion payment of the permanent fund dividend from the normal POMV, and then the remaining deficit paid out of the CBR to the operating budget. In this situation, because we have had already the normal operating budget and capital budgets appropriated before the dividend was appropriated, there's just, for the sheer mechanics of the drafting, it appears slightly differently here, seeing that bridge fund go to both the dividend and the CBR. It's still the $3 billion bridge fund. The math still comes out the same at the bottom line, but it just appears here as the remainder of the bridge fund necessary for deposit into the CBR is $1.47 billion. The first portion of that bridge fund is going to pay the fiscal year 22, calendar year 21 dividend.
It may be easier to show you on a spreadsheet. I just don't have one with me right here.
Let's try one more time.
Representative Ortiz?
So, I understand under SB 26, the 5% draw, understand that that generated this year or will generate about $3 billion. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And out of that, there's money that's going to go into the PFD, and then there's money that's going to go into the operating budget. So that money is spoken for, correct?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, that's the way that Department of Revenue has modeled it. The actual appropriation, HB 69, uses that entire $3 billion POMV to pay for the state operating budget.
So it's not going into the CBR?
Not the SB 26 POMV draw.
So with that, then to get to that $3 billion going into the CBR, we are going to have to withdraw from the earnings reserve $3 billion, correct? That would be above and beyond the standard 5% draw that takes place.
Correct.
Okay. So it's not really 1.47 one-time transfer. It's really a $3 billion transfer is what we're talking about.
Correct.
Okay, I'm good. Thanks.
Okay, do we have any further questions? Okay, I see no further questions. I'd like to set our next meeting for 11 a.m. on Sunday and set an amendment deadline of 9 a.m. on Sunday. And if folks have any language section amendments, if you could have those to Ledge legal by noon tomorrow, which is Saturday. Again, that's just for if it's a language amendment. Those tend to be a little more technical and complicated. But if it's just a numbers section amendment, then 9 a.m. to my office on Sunday. And that's 9 a.m. whether it's a language or a numbers section amendment. And if it's a numbers section amendment, it looks like maybe they're preferring that just the paper amendment, which you can find that online. This is all a little bit complicated, so if anybody has any questions, feel free to check back with me. So again, 9 a.m. Deadline for amendments on Sunday, and we'll have a meeting Sunday morning, 11 a.m., August 22. Do we have any questions? Representative Josephson?
Perhaps you might revisit the rules pertaining to the votes. My understanding is members can be not in the room for purposes of voting on an amendment, but if there's a motion made to move the bill from committee, they must be here. Do I have that right?
That is correct. So if amendments, if you are not here, you can vote on those via teleconference or audio conference. And then to move a bill out of committee, requires presence here in the room, and that cannot be voted via teleconference. So, do we have any further questions? Seeing none, Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Kocher. I just had a question. Are we going to be hearing public testimony on the bill on Sunday as well?
We had not planned that. We have had a lot of public testimony. This is primarily the PFD issue that this bill largely deals with, and we've had numerous public testimonies on the PFD in the past, and so it was not our intent, but certainly I'm open if folks would like to change that. Representative Rasmussen?
I would be very supportive, and I actually think it's important that we continue, with the transparent process and make sure that the public has as much time to weigh in as possible. So I would really appreciate if we did take the time for public testimony.
Okay, thank you. We'll maybe touch base and then let the committee know. Representative Josephson?
Mr. Chair, if the chair decides to hear public testimony, I would, as I understand it, that could happen. Again, if the chair makes that decision, that could happen tomorrow. And I just wanted to remind the chair of that.
Thank you, and that is a possible option. So seeing no further questions or comments, we will be adjourned. We'll let folks know what we're going to do with public testimony here. Personally, I think Saturday is a good option. And we'll be adjourned. Time is currently 2:02 p.m. Thank you. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Carpenter. Briefings. And House Finance is back on record. The point was also made that the fiscal working group has also had pretty extensive public testimony on the 50-50 plan as well. But just to note, and at this point we haven't decided what we want to do. But I guess the reason why we're moving fairly quickly on this is we're going to start losing quite a few members here, both in the House and the Senate here in the next week or so, and we're just trying to get some movement before we lose folks, and then we end up timing out on the 30-day session. So that was part of the reason for this. So if there are no further comments, we will be adjourned at 2:04 p.m. Thank you.